What is universal life versus whole life? What whole life agents just don't understand. Next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times best-selling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrew speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled at the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people, and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Folks, you may know that I have a YouTube channel called Three Dimensional Wealth. It's free when you subscribe. I release an in-depth answer to a financial question that has been asked anywhere from 30 to 300 or more times a month for the last several months. And I've been asked this question numerous times, especially recently. People ask, what is universal life versus whole life insurance? And I'm going to share with you something that whole life agents just don't seem to understand. I don't think they've been taught the nuances, the benefits, how the universal life insurance contracts came about versus whole life insurance. So in a nutshell, universal life was created back in 1980, not by an insurance company, but by E.F. Hutton. They were a brokerage firm. And it was designed for living benefits, for tax-free accumulation and tax-free access. And I'm going to share with you here in a few minutes how that has been sort of a grandfathered sacred cash cow in the Internal Revenue Code for over a century, both for whole life and universal life. But whole life insurance is primarily designed for death benefits. So let's talk about the two differences here. Whole life is where you overpay premiums the early years, so you can underpay premiums the later years, and you build up equity inside that insurance policy. It's called cash value that can help you be covered for life insurance if you were to die during your whole life. And so premiums are based upon that. Guarantees in whole life are a very strict track that you must run on in order to have guaranteed death benefits for your whole life. And so the whole life chassis that it's built on is based upon those guarantees. If you do not pay the required minimum premium into whole life insurance and stay on those tracks, then you lose those guarantees. But it's designed to give you a guaranteed death benefit if you live to be 100 or 120 years old. And so whole life insurance is really designed for death benefit, which there's nothing wrong with that if you're looking for strictly a death benefit. And so whole life was designed for that. But when universal life was originally the brainchild of E.F. Hutton, it wasn't about death benefit being the primary objective. E.F. Hutton realized in the Internal Revenue Code that life insurance is the only vehicle in the Internal Revenue Code that allows you to accumulate your money, that cash value, totally tax-free. Why is that? It's because life insurance is where people take ownership of their future so that they will not be a drain on social dollars, that if you insure yourself, then you are going to provide for your widow if you die, or the orphans. They will not become a strain on government welfare programs. And so why would the government penalize people for taking ownership of their own secure financial future, whether they live a long time or die? And so it's a tax-free sacred cow in the Internal Revenue Code because they've studied this several times. Even back in 1990, when the federal government got hard up for tax revenue, the General Accountability Office and the House Ways, Senate, and Finance Committees, they came out with a report and said, leave life insurance tax-free because it would cost us more than it would make us if we taxed it, because we would have to give additional welfare and benefits to those widows and orphans that we would be taken away from if we taxed life insurance when people died. And so they said, leave it alone. It would cost us more than it would make us. By the way, they also realized that many Congress people own life insurance policies, and they didn't want to shoot themselves in the foot. But they also said in that 1990 report, if government ever got sort of stupid enough to tax insurance benefits, that they should grandfather people who already had insurance in place prior to that time. Only brand new policies after that would be subject to tax treatment on life insurance proceeds or life insurance benefits. And so that's called grandfathering, if you don't know. And so it only applies to any new laws that might be passed in the future. Anytime there's been tax laws that have been passed as it relates to whole life or universal life, like back in the 1980s, from a tax standpoint, these are called TEFRA, DEFRA, and TAMRA, the Tax Equity Fiscal Responsibility Act of 1982, the Deficit Reduction Act of 1984, and the Technical and Miscellaneous Revenue Act of 1988. I had universal life insurance policies prior to those three tax citations. I've never had to abide by those because I was grandfathered. That's what grandfathering does. Now, let's just get back to the simple point here. So life insurance is the only vehicle that allows you to accumulate your money totally tax-free, this cash value in your policy, under Section 72E of the Internal Revenue Code. It's been that way since the inception of the code. Number two, Section 7702 allows you to access your money for living benefits totally tax-free if you do it the smart way that the IRS tells you to do. It's not some tax loophole. And so that's Section 7702. You can access money for tax-free retirement income or whatever you need. And then when you ultimately die and it blossoms into a death benefit, if I had, let's say, $1 million of cash value in my universal life policy right now, or my portfolio of universal life policies, I'm 68 years old. If I died in an accident tomorrow, every million would blossom to about $2.5 million and transfer totally income tax-free to my beneficiaries, my spouse, my children, a church, a charity, whoever I named as the beneficiary, totally income tax-free. It blossoms in value and transfers income tax-free. There's nothing else in the Internal Revenue Code that does that. Municipal bonds don't do that. Roths don't do that, okay? And so that allows you to accumulate, access, and transfer your money totally income tax-free. It helps out when you do pass away because the death benefit is tax-free. But for living benefits under Section 72E and 7702, it allows you that every $1 million can generate $60, $70, $80, $90, $100,000 a year of tax-free income based upon the rate of return on the insurance policy. If you live to be 120, it's totally income tax-free. And so that has been challenged before, and it's never come under the scrutiny of the IRS or Congress. In 1990, they said, leave this alone. It's tax-free. So what's the difference? Universal Life was designed in 1980 by E.F. Hutton for living benefits, that you can accumulate your money tax-free. You can access it tax-free for retirement income. And then when you ultimately die, it will blossom and transfer income tax-free. But with Universal Life, it was originally designed where you take the least amount of insurance that the IRS will let you get away with under TEFRA and DEFRA tax citations, and you put in the most money, the most premium the IRS allows, as fast as they allow, and it turns into this tax-free cash cow. Now, what I have earned on my universal life policies from 1980 until 1997 was 8.2%. That was the average, totally tax-free. After 1997, indexed universal life came out, and indexing has allowed me to earn 10.07% on the average. Some years I don't earn anything with indexing, but I don't lose when the market's going down, so I'm protected. But I've earned as high as 16 and 17 and 20 25% during the up years, like 2017. And so it's the only vehicle that allows you to do that. And so I can generally, if I earn 9, I can net 8% in universal life. Ever since the beginning of indexed universal life, I've averaged a little over 9.6. So if I earn 9.6, I net 8.6. Whole life, the best whole life I've ever seen illustrated was back when Northwestern Mutual said that they could tout 8% dividend paying history, which they haven't come close to recently. But if they could credit 8, that's the gross rate of return. The net rate of return was 5.9. By the time you were 95 years old, it took that long to get there. I can have my universal life policy, I can have the cash value be within 5% of the death benefit where I'm self-insured in less than 15 years. So I don't need guarantees with universal life because I'm self-insuring. My cash value equals the death benefit oftentimes within 15 years. So here's the deal. Ask a whole life agent to show you an illustration with $1 million of cash value at age 65 to give you an income illustration out to age 120. Compare that to universal life. They won't even hold a candle.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
How do you compare insurance companies, especially life insurance? Welcome back. This is Doug Andrew, Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. If you're just joining us, in the previous segment, I was talking about the difference between universal life and whole life insurance. It's a question I get asked all the time. And we talked about how whole life insurance is primarily designed for death benefit. And universal life was designed from the word go back in 1980 by E.F. Hutton, who is not an insurance company, for living benefits, for tax-free accumulation of cash, tax-free income, for living benefits, retirement, other goals, business planning, all kinds of things. And so that's one of the big differences. And so if you look at an illustration where maybe you have $1 million of cash value at age 65 in a whole life policy versus a universal life policy, the whole life policy might be able to generate $40,000 a year of tax-free income. That would be maybe, let's say, a 4% payout. Whereas with the same assumptions and everything where you actually can use historical average rates of return, a properly funded, max funded universal life contract would probably give you close to double the payout, more like an 8% payout or $80,000 a year based on actual historical performance. And so if you're using it for living benefits, it'll knock the socks off of a whole life policy for living benefits. Now, if all you need is life insurance for death benefits, can whole life, universal life can both be designed to do that. Now, the next question people ask is, well, how do you compare insurance companies, especially for life insurance? Now, there are four major rating agencies, S&P, that's Standard & Poor's. They give ratings of all kinds of businesses and corporations. Then you have, for the insurance industry, AM Best. You have Moody's and you have Fitch. And they all have their own rating systems. S&P, the highest rating you can get is a AAA, AAA. AM Best, I think it's an A+, still is the highest rating they give. And so it gets very confusing because maybe an insurance agent says, well, we're rated AAA, and that sounds really good, or we're rated A with S&P. Well, that's not the highest ratings. You have AA and you have AAA. So in order to clear up that confusion, there is a company that's called Vital Signs, and they study these four different rating agencies, and they look at the financials of these insurance companies, and many of them are multi-billion dollar institutions, and there's a few that are multi-trillion dollar institutions. One where I put some of my money, they manage as much money as the IRS collects in income tax and in entire year, $3 trillion plus dollars. So they are huge. And what this company does is they measure the liquidity, the acid test ratios, and what have you. And then they assign what is called a Comdex score between 1 and 100. And if you chose an insurance company that has a Comdex score of 90 or higher, 90 to 100, that means you're in the top 10%. In other words, 90% of other insurance companies are ranked less than that company is. And so I usually choose companies that are ranked very high with a Comdex score and that have AAA ratings with S&P. AM Best would be an A+, and so forth. But it's just easier if you use a Comdex score. Now, that's not the only measurement. You want to look at the products that they offer and focus on what is the objective of the insurance you're purchasing. If you're purchasing life insurance primarily for living benefits, to have the highest, best net internal rate of return, to be self-insured in as little as 15 years, to where your cash value, based upon IRS guidelines, where you maximum fund it, you take the least amount of insurance and you put the most premium in, as the IRS allows, as fast as they allow, then your cash value can equal and it would exceed the death benefit, except the death benefit will then go up with your cash value. So, for example, if at age 60, if I wanted to set aside $500,000 to keep this simple, I could put in $500,000 and get away with $1,250,000 of life insurance with Universal Life. And I can do that. I could buy way more life insurance than that for $500,000, but that's not my objective. I want my $500,000 to double to $1 million in 7 to 10 years based on actual crediting interest rates and history in the worst periods of time since the Great Depression, like the lost decade, 2000 to 2010, the average return was 7.23%. Your money, $500,000 of cash value would have doubled to $1 million in that decade when most Americans, they didn't make much of anything in the market. It was up and down, and barely back up to break even again. So Universal Life has usually given me an average net internal rate of return after all costs and fees between 7 to 10%, even if it's 6%. It knocks the socks off of a max-funded whole life insurance policy. And what you're doing is you don't need the guarantees of whole life, because guarantees are there to make sure that the death benefit is guaranteed your whole life. When you actually maximum fund a universal life, that $500,000 doubles to $1 million. The original death benefit was $1,250,000. Now the amount at risk is only $250,000 because I'm wanting to choose the option that will allow my cash value to grow to the greatest amount. Now, in another 10 years, let's say, at 7.2%, $1 million doubles to $2 million, which is more than the insurance I had in the first place. So I don't need any guarantees because my cash exceeds the death benefit technically, but the death benefit stays about 5% ahead of my cash value in a max-funded universal life policy. But I don't need the guarantees anymore. If that's your objective, then you want to focus on the products. There's several hundred insurance companies that offer universal life. To be honest with you, I would not put my money in only about maybe 10 or 12 of them. What about the other 190 or more? I wouldn't consider to put my money there because the products are not designed to have the features that I like to keep the costs low. In other words, is the insurance company stingy? I've had companies say, well, we're the biggest. Well, the biggest in what area? If bigger were better, Miss America would be an elephant. Bigger is not always better. You have to have the companies that are not stingy with rates of return instead of touting, look at all the money we have in our coffers, and we're just keeping it here on hand, and they don't pay out a good interest rate, or if it was whole life, a good dividend rate, and yet they claim they're big, and so they must be better. Well, no, you want to look and see which ones are being generous to their policyholders for living benefits, if that's your objective, or for the guarantees on the death benefit. What is your objective? Do they treat old policyholders the same as new ones? Sometimes you'll find insurance companies that just leave the old policyholders sort of out in the cold when they come out with new features or benefits. No, you want insurance companies that whenever they come out with a new feature or benefit, they apply it to the old policyholders also, so you're not left out in the cold. And so there's a lot of factors that I always take into consideration when I'm looking where I'm going to put my serious cash to accumulate my money tax-free for goals such as retirement or working capital for my business or college funding for my children or my grandchildren or emergency funds. Whatever the use is for the tax-free accumulation, I want to make sure that I choose a very strong company with a high Comdex score, the companies that are not stingy, that aren't just trying to become big and put all the money in their coffers and not be generous to give me decent rates of return, so that if I earn 9, I net 8. If I earn 11, I can net 10, which is what I've done for the last 25 years. If I earn 7, I net 6. If I earn 6, I net 5. I only want one of my percentage points of interest they're crediting me to go out in the cost, which is money that would otherwise go out the window in unnecessary income tax, if I put money in some tax-deferred IRA or 401k, and that's why I prefer this over that.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.